episode 81 of Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to Central and Eastern Europe and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. My name is Maciek Makulski, and with me is the other co-host, Adam Reichardt. Hi, Adam.
Hello, Maciek. Hi, everyone. Glad that you can join us. Each week, we bring you a discussion on topics related to our region. In this episode, we are looking at the developing situation on the border with Belarus and Poland, Lithuania, and Latvia. As a reminder, this podcast is listener-supported. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member via our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. And don't forget to listen to the end of this episode for our traditional patron shout-out.
And Talk Eastern Europe is a member of the Europod Network, a network of European podcasts covering a range of social and political issues.
Well, we have a very interesting topic today, so let's get started. So as we mentioned in the beginning, we are going to talk about the developing situation that is taking place on the border, largely between Belarus and Poland, but also with Lithuania and Latvia. And this has to do with the fact that there is an influx of illegal immigrants coming, or at least trying to cross the border, coming from Middle East countries, primarily from Iraq, but also Afghanistan and other countries, crossing the border of with Belarus and Lithuania, Latvia, and Poland. And really, this is a deliberate attempt by the regime in Minsk, the Lukashenko regime, to add pressure on these countries, which are bordering Belarus, which are members of the EU, members of NATO, and have been putting and do not recognize Lukashenko as the president following the fraudulent elections from last year. So this is an attempt by the regime to create some sort of, let's say, migration crisis, basically, and destabilize the countries by pushing these migrants into those countries. Quite a cynical policy, and particularly from the human rights perspective, a very dire policy where it's just using people as tools to try to influence internal stability of these countries. And that's kind of the main context of our discussion today.
Yes, and as you said, Adam, it is or has treated by the regime in Minsk, but we cannot also rule out the possibility that there is or there was any inspiration or even complicity from Russia, which is interested in further deepening the international isolation of the Belarusian regime and, of course, imposing the control over the country. As you said, at the first place, we have serious and tragic problem at the borderland. It's, I think, close to the humanitarian crisis, or it is already a humanitarian crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Poland, as well as Lithuania and Latvia, attempted to, you know, to do something about that. For instance, Poland introduced a state of emergency at the September of the 2nd of September this year.
In those areas.
Yes. Right. And similar, but not exactly the same, not that harsh measures were introduced in Lithuania as well. I'm not really sure about Latvia, but I think it's similar there. So, as you said, people are used somehow as a tools, as a weapon by Lukashenko's regime. And I think in this episode we cannot add too much to, you know, the factography of the events, because mm-hmm. the events are covered by media. On the other hand, we have kind of a shortage of information about the situation at the borderland between Poland and Belarus because of the state of emergency I mentioned, which caused that media are not allowed to be there. So we have to trust official information provided by the Polish government and sometimes from some activists, non-governmental organizations who are trying, you know, to be there and to report from this region about the situation. But it is obviously very, very difficult one. And at least from my perspective, it is difficult to understand. We have a lot of question marks how exactly those people, for instance, got there. So my idea or our idea for this podcast was not exactly to, you know, to cover the current events there, but rather to try to understand, let me say it like that, a deeper context of it, why such countries like Belarus decided to use such a tactic. I don't know even how to call it, but let's call it a tactic to use people, you know, as a tool to achieve something.
Right. Yeah?
And this aim, as you mentioned, is to destabilize the situation in the EU countries. Or in the EU in general, to, you know, probably achieve some political gains, like lifting sanctions, or simply to acknowledge that Lukashenko is still a Belarusian president. So here comes the main theme of this episode, which is biopolitics, a concept introduced by the French philosopher Michel Foucault a few decades ago. And in very general way, for Foucault, the concept of biopolitics was about that, about, you know, politicization and sometimes securitization of human body. And he looked at this concept through the category of power. So it was for him a different form of power. But what is new now, and why we want to also discuss this concept and think if it can help us to understand the situation better, is that this concept can be probably also useful to explain international relations. So Foucault didn't do that. He didn't. His research was not about international relations. This is something new. And fortunately, we have a very good guest speaker to talk about that. His name is Andrei Makarychev. He's a visiting professor at the Institute of Political Studies of the University of Tartu in Estonia. And for our regular listeners, he is a well-known speaker because we invited him some time ago, and he also was a guest in one of our online debate organized by New Eastern Europe. And what is also important, that Andrei Makarychev is a co-author of the book written together with Alexandra Jacek on biopolitics. The title of the book is Critical Biopolitics of the Post-Soviet From Population to Nations. And this is exactly the attempt to, you know, to implement the biopolitics to study international relations, and the two authors focus on the region of post-Soviet space. So I think we are very lucky to have such a great guest, and hopefully we will contribute somehow to, you know, to understand the reasons and what we can do about that, why Belarus or Russia, together with Russia, started this process, and how we can deal with it.
Okay, Maciek, thank you for this introduction. I just would add that it is great value to have Andrei Makarychev with us, because he has a perspective from the region. As you mentioned, he is co-author of the book, which is looking at this topic of biopolitics in the region, so it's definitely worth it's definitely an added value here for our listeners and for this discussion, particularly applying this theme to the situation on the border with Belarus. So with that, let's now go into your interview with Andrei Makarychev from Tartu.
Hello again. I'm joined now by Andrei Makarychev. Hello, Andrei. Nice to have you here at Talk Eastern Europe again.
Thank you for inviting me.
Andrei Makarychev is a visiting professor at Johann Schütte Institute of Political Studies in Tartu, Estonia. Andrei, I invited you today to discuss current migration crisis, I think I can call it like that, on the eastern borderland of the European Union. Very briefly, for last several weeks, Latvia, Lithuania and Poland have experienced
numerous attempts of illegal crossing of the state borders with Belarus by migrants coming from countries like Iraq or Afghanistan or other countries from Middle East or Asia. And I want to discuss with you how we can comprehend this crisis, this situation, because it is still difficult for me. That was my motivation behind that conversation, because what we saw was simply we saw how a state, Belarus, I mean, used people, real people, as a tool, we can say, in achieving the country's political purposes. So I was struggling to find for myself, a proper way how we can understand better such developments. And then I thought about biopolitics and biopower, those two concepts which are affiliated with Michel Foucault and Giorgio Agamben, and who are the you are a perfect person to discuss those concepts. You studied it a lot, and you are the author of the book Critical Biopolitics in Post-Soviet Space, together with Alexandra Jacek. And as your former student, I know that you can talk about biopolitics a lot and in a very interesting way. But I think before we will try to explain this case for we want to discuss today, we should start from a brief introduction on biopolitics and biopower. So what are those two concepts, and how do you use it in your research?
Indeed, this is quite important development in Europe related to this crisis on the eastern borderlands, as you have mentioned. And I would agree that the biopolitical frame can be used as, let's say, general explanatory tool for this type of situations that involve inflow of people and inflow of immigrants, more specifically in this case. So if you want me to briefly introduce the concept of biopolitics, well, I can do this through the reference to two main pillars of this concept. It's life and politics. And the crux and the gist of biopolitical theorizing is exactly about how issues related to lives of ordinary people might affect political domain, and vice versa, how politics become part of everyday lives of people, including issues of consumption, mobility, and even their medical conditions and sexuality and other elements. So this is exactly what biopolitics studies. And of course, in this broad frame, you can expect biopolitics being something or denoting something positive, like in the works of Michel Foucault, whom you mentioned, for whom biopolitics was a productive force. So it's the state that takes care of our bodies in order to increase their working potential, their health conditions, and their reproductive behavior, etc. But in the meantime, what remains relatively less studied are those different, quite explicitly negative or questionable elements of biopolitics, in which different forms of power, including different states, they use human beings as a weapon. They use human beings as a resource. Again, there is nothing new in the fact that states do use our bodies as resource. The question is for what purpose and with what aim. So in the case that you have mentioned, in the crisis that has been artificially created by the Lukashenko regime, we see exactly this negative and I would say even gloomy part of biopolitics when human bodies are securitized, human bodies are weaponized. And that's something that we really need to take into account. because what is happening there is, on the one hand, a biopolitical story, a story of thousands of people who have been incited to illegally cross borders, more than one border. Because, as I understand, this affects not only Lithuania, but also Latvia and Poland. And in the meantime, there is also geopolitical content in this story, because it is about Belarus, and most likely it's not only Belarus that plays this game. We know that contact between Moscow and Minsk are quite strong and quite explicit. So we do have a situation of geopolitical confrontation well, let's say, largely and overwhelmingly liberal European Union and its member states, and explicitly illiberal and authoritarian Belarus and Russia, again, that stands behind this. So there is a kind of split, or a geopolitical split and divide. And yeah, the story can be told as a biopolitical story. And in the meantime, it also contains very strong geopolitical elements. To be fair, well, this is not the first time that human bodies are weaponized, that human bodies are used as a political tool. And that's exactly what biopolitics tries to study: when and how and under what circumstances human bodies move into the center of political or security processes and issues. For example, take the phenomena of suicide bombers. That's exactly how bodies, in a physical sense, not in a metaphorical sense, are used as weapons of mass destruction. Of course, what we have in the case of Belarus is also about weaponizing migration. It is about, in my view, about using vulnerabilities of EU member states, and using particular sensitivity to the issue of migration that dates back to the refugee crisis of 2015. And on the Belarusian side of the border, of course, all those vulnerabilities and sensitivities are well known. And that's exactly what is weaponized. I would definitely qualify this type of biopolitical weapon as part of the hybrid threats to specific countries. But don't forget that these countries are members of two major international organizations, the European Union and NATO. So in this sense, again, this biopolitical component is very heavily complemented by geopolitical rivalry and geopolitical confrontation. If we look at the wider picture, we can easily notice that it's not the first time that refugees and migrants have been used for the pretty much the same purposes. Maybe the case of Belarus is a little bit more visible and a little bit more, let's say, problematic for the European Union because of its scale. But some time ago, pretty much the same happened in the Spanish enclaves in Morocco, named Ceuta and Melilla, when refugees on the Moroccan side, they have trespassed the border. And the Spanish government took this incident quite seriously. I'm also aware of a similar incident, or a series of incidents, in Turkish-Greek border, when the Greek side just discovered that, again, pretty much the same scenario was implemented, in that dozens or thousands of refugees have been crossing the border from the Turkish side. And I also remember similar incident of a smaller scale, but still on the Russian-Norwegian border. The refugees from, let's say, Oriental countries on the Russian side have been crossing the border with Norway, and the Norwegian side clearly qualified this unpleasant incident as intentionally being staged by the Russian side. So in this sense, there are other other cases, but for the European Union and for NATO and its specific member states, I think what happened because of this type of Belarusian biopolitics is quite a serious as an incident.
Yeah, I totally agree that biopolitics is not a new concept, as you already very well described. I was also thinking about this experience with migration crisis in which Turkey was involved, which happened on the Turkish-Greek border. For me, what is new here is, of course, that it happened really close to Poland and the Baltic states. So in the past, it was quite a virtual problem for this part of Europe. But also those 6-7 years ago, this migration crisis was also different because it involved much more people. So we were not even aware how many people are coming to Europe, and so we could talk about, you know, masses of people which are more anonymous for us. In the case of Poland, a Polish borderland right now, we are talking about, you know, 32 people or something like that, no more than 40. That's the news we know from media reports, and it makes, I think this is this aspect which makes it more visible, and this biopolitical component like more evident for me. Probably it was also why I started to think about this in those categories. I mean, using people as weapons by Belarus. And also, this is a very good point that biopolitics does not operate in, you know, in a vacuum. It's connected with other concepts like hybrid war, which is very often now mentioned, or actions below the threshold of war. So yeah, this is, I think, important to underline that that it serves as an additional component to understand what we are facing, but nevertheless, at least from this now, from this Polish perspective and Baltic states perspective, the use of people as a tool to achieve something by Belarus is very clear, visible. And I also wanted to touch upon that, what you wrote in your book I mentioned before, because in this book you use also biopolitics to explain how the countries of the post-Soviet countries, how they managed to, you know, transform themselves. And your argument is that the biopolitical vocabulary can also help us to better understand the transition of those countries. But of course, we have very different countries in this space, because on the one hand, we have Baltic states, Estonia, we have Russia, we have Ukraine, and so on. So very different experience. But what is important for me here, that you show together with Aleksandra Jacek, that this biopolitical strategy is applied by all actors, yeah, in the same time. It's not only that Belarus or Russia uses biopolitics, so their biopolitical practices are met with biopolitical practices of the other side. So I was wondering if you have any reflections about that. That is a mutual process which is happening almost all the time.
No, absolutely. It's always mutual, and it's always mutually correlative. If we look at migration in a wider sense and its implications for national identities or national, national discourses, mainstream discourses or populist discourses, in Baltic states and in the state of Central Europe, will definitely see a clear effect or result of the migration crisis. And this effect is about shifting the political spectrum to the right side of the debate, and the rise of national populist parties who were intentionally building their identity on the basis of anti-migration or counter-migration policy, claiming that there is no space for outsiders here. For example, in the Baltic context, the very fact that there is quite a sizable Russian minority in Estonia is still kind of weakly integrated. It was used as an argument, saying something like, we still have to finish the integration of the minority that have been settled in Estonia decades ago. So in this sense, definitely the rise of the right-wing populism is one of the effects of migration crisis, and the national identity, the pure national identity, or even in some radical version, the purification of national identity, like exclusion of otherness, became a part of, political debates, and even in some countries, part of mainstream politics. And to some extent, the securitization of migration has started already. So in many contexts, migration was perceived and discussed as a threat, not as a charity, not as something that might bring, let's say, a new skills or new people who might diversify cultural landscapes and might contribute to a national economy. No, migration was definitely securitized and perceived as a threat. And now with this, recent developments with Belarus, then I think we might have some kind of follow-up to this discourse. I can easily imagine that the affected countries, there will be a political repercussions of that. So politicians, especially I think on the right side, from the right side of the political spectrum, they would require much stricter border control, more funds for establishing or creating a real border, so that it would prevent outsiders from coming. So in this sense, there is a clear trend towards rebordering in Europe. And again, this is part of something which almost no one expected after 1991, when we were dreaming about a borderless world, when we were dreaming about Europe without fences and borders. Now, both fences and borders are coming back, and not just metaphorically. Sometimes fences are physical, parts of physical reality. For example, Norway, one of the first reactions of Norway after this, relatively small size incursion of refugees through Russian Norwegian border was to erect a fence. Mm-hmm. So you can see that these fences might again become a part of everyday reality. And these fences, this bordering, is again both geopolitical and biopolitical. Let's imagine what might mean a much stronger fortification of borders with Belarus. It might definitely have a political repercussion. So Belarus is no longer a part of the Eastern Partnership. At least that's what we've heard from Lukashenko, that he does not want to participate in Eastern Partnership. So now it's 6-1. In the long run, that might what I'm afraid, this all might recreate the East-West divide. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's quite feasible and quite possible to anticipate that if we kind of try to aggregate all those cases together, we'll see that they might reclaim the necessity of stronger borders and much more serious attention to border security, etc. So long-term repercussions might not be very nice for all of us.
Yeah. Exactly. I totally agree with you. I think I will come back to this thought, but just to end this thread and coming back to my initial question about those using of biopolitical practices by both sides. What else came to my mind is that on the one hand, we can see biopolitics as a kind of an aggressive move undertaken by Belarus, but and then we have those, you know, biopolitical argumentation behind that move. But on the other side, from the EU side, we have biopolitics more as a defensive move, which means this securitization of population, as you mentioned, securitization of our own citizens. And also, I think it goes further because it's also securitization of certain values we believe in. And I want to ask you about what do you think, what are or what could be the biopolitical explanation for the motivations behind such move, such aggressive move as Belarus did? Like, why a country might think that it is a good moment and good tactic to use people as weapon? Is it because other means are not enough, or is it rather different, or maybe it is about, you know, also undermining really the values that the other side believes? I'm thinking now about human rights, because, you know, the Belarus and Russia know that human rights and protection of human rights, also including refugees, is something important for the EU. So maybe do you have some reflections on that?
Well, I have a very general idea in response to your question. And for that, let's just make a step back and look at all the cases as elements in one chain. We have Russia, Norway, you have Belarus, Lithuania, Latvia, Poland. You have Greece, Turkey, Greece. And you have Morocco, Spain. So basically, in all these four cases, European countries, members of the European Union and, you know, or NATO, they are on the defensive and they are objects of this, let's say, type of transgression. So my explanation is that it's basically non-liberal or illiberal regimes that do such things. And the explanation is that within these regimes, the value of human life is very low, and they can afford playing with human beings and their lives as they would play with, elements of material reality, like bullets, guns, cannons, etc. And that's what might explain this this polarity in each of these cases. Again, it's basically either dictatorial or regimes with a questionable democratic legitimacy that play these games. And to expand a little bit this conversation, well, of course, I can mention that in my view, the idea of the Russian world is purely biopolitical, or largely biopolitical. It's about kind of artificial extension of the national borders of Russia to include certain parts of the population that belongs to different countries, like, for example, Ukraine, that has been the victim of the Russian world being implemented in practice. And again, this is also a biopolitical construct. In the sense that, first of all, the value of human life is very low. And secondly, the whole idea of, the whole idea of a spillover of, let's say, biomass from one country to another has nothing to do with liberalism. And again, I can hardly imagine that any of, relatively democratic and liberal regimes can even think about doing pretty much the same. And you are completely right. What is understudied is security dimensions of this, type of instrumentalizing and weaponizing human beings. and the repercussions for the whole system of international relations in a more general sense. When it comes to European countries, again, who are victims or objects or targets of these policies, well, I think that a major biopolitical debate would be about how to qualify, how to categorize those migrants as a poor victims of conflicts or as perpetrators. And I'm sure that in many specific circumstances, in many debates, there will be voices who would insist that still they are victims. These are poor people. Someone who Giorgio Agamben, whom you mentioned, called homo sacer, a marginal personality who is not integrated into any regimes of protection, who can be easily killed. So the whole idea of homo sacer in Agamben's theory is exactly about explaining that there are certain categories of people who are beyond all possible regimes of caretaking and protection, who are on their own, and who face the life in its wildest sense, a life as a space for survival and not for the space of, institutional or political enhancement. So in this sense, that's one type of categorization of migrant. But I'm also sure that in many countries, there are the voices who would claim the opposite, saying that not these people, they are perpetrators. They transgressed our borders. They made an inroad into our country. So we cannot treat them as just victims. It's our population that might be victim of that. And again, we know that this type of debate, first of all, it might be very polarizing. And those polarities, they already exist in many countries. And they also might generate another impulse for, let's say, right-wing nationalist groups who would use populist rhetoric and who would again turn the public debate back to the situation of 2015, trying to make connection between 2015 and 2021. Again, claiming that this is the elements in one chain. So that's what might local or national repercussions of this crisis might be for the affected countries.
Yeah, I think what Belarus has already achieved by doing that is we now have, or we will very soon have, this debate you said you just described. So we will have to think about all these people, and we maybe we will end up in thinking about them as a strangers or as a securitization of our own population, as you said. And this is also interesting how it flows very quickly, because we started from describing, the potential of biopolitics to explain rather international relations, and you underline those links between biopolitics and geopolitics. And now it will be in many countries internal problem, the problem of domestic politics. So it's
and don't forget about let's not forget about COVID-19 and this particular sensitivity to all kind of medical issues in European countries. I'm aware of the fact that migration has been already medicalized in right-wing discourses in many countries. Again, it's not just metaphorically, but in a more direct sense, claiming that, well, those people, they are not welcome here because we don't know what this, their state of health conditions, and we need to make them going through all those medical checks, and this is expensive, et cetera, et cetera. So now I think with COVID-19 in the full swing, this type of, let's say, medicalization of illegal migration might be even boosted even more.
Yeah, exactly. So is it even a proper ground for a biopolitical discourse to grow? Yeah. I think the last question, since the time is running quickly, sure. But I would like to come back to those to those inspiring thoughts you just shared about the possible long-term consequences of this current crisis. And you mentioned that we will probably have to learn how to live with physical borders again, something that we tend that we wanted to believe we can forget. But so borders which are again physical and very serious thing might be one of the consequences of this current crisis. What else you can if you think about longer time perspective? Because if we talk about security, maybe one of the scenario is that the European Union will increase its spending on security. You know, there is never ending debate of having EU army. I wouldn't go that far right now, but any kind of investment in at least, you know, some special forces which are to secure the borders. Also, you know, the history probably does not repeat exactly, but you mentioned that it can be like a new type of Cold War. So the world divided for two blocks. Do you have something like that in mind? So in the last words, let's talk about this possible long-term consequences, which we now see.
Yes, you're right. We definitely need to keep an eye on the concept of, I mean, the changing concept of border that is not necessarily anymore just a geopolitical line that delineates territories of national jurisdictions. I think there is something more in the whole idea of borders, and there are many borders. Some of them are visible, some of them are invisible, some of them are formalized, some of them are more like dispersed. And there is already in the academic literature, there is a concept of biopolitical borders that basically drives our thinking exactly in this direction. I think one of the boosters for biopolitical rebordering is, of course, COVID-19. Many borders have been locked while they are gradually opening up. But frankly speaking, no one is 100% sure that, for example, those trips that have been planned more than 1 month in advance could be implemented, because we all expect that at certain point, at certain conditions, borders again might come back. And of course, these are not physical borders. These are different, you know, colors of country that have been categorized according to this statistical data from green to red. And if your country is in the red group, well, that basically means that your citizens are in a no-go
situation,
are not welcome. And again, this is not like a border with military guys well-equipped and well-armed. No, for example, borders can be, border functions can be implemented by transportation companies, by ferries, by trains, by air companies who might just check your identity and deny your boarding, because you are a citizen of a country that is considered as risky. And so in this sense, definitely, and migration just contributed to this, different forms of migration, they just contribute to this very sensitive attitude to borders with some perspectives of, again, rebordering. But definitely that's not going to be a border as we used to know it during the Cold War. It's going to be, I think, a quite sophisticated system of different forms of exclusions or different forms of different practices that might heavily complicate the whole process of crossing the border through paperwork, through medical proofs and checks, etc. So in this sense, yes, there is something new with the border. And many of these mechanisms, I think, would be more biopolitical than geopolitical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So borders also understood as imposing a lot of administrative
limitations, regulations, impediments, and categorization of people into different groups. You are from green group, you are from orange group, you are from red group, not because you are sick, but because you belong to a country or you have a passport of a country that is statistically in this group. Mm-hmm. So that's what categorization, biopolitical categorization is about. Of course, the forms may be very mild, very soft, but still this might be a part of our future. And some of the borders, they are locked for quite a while. Borders with Russia, for example. Or imagine that, for example, in a certain country that is bordering on the European Union, there is some kind of, medical or ecological disaster. I think borders would react first, and people from those countries would not be welcome. For example, de facto visa-free regime with Ukraine was de facto discontinued for quite a while. Now it's gradually back. It's not unconditional, but still. So in this sense, it's like exceptional times might be part of our reality again.
Andrei, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. I think we have to end here, but I hope we managed to show not only the theoretical part of biopolitics, but also its practical consequences, or how the concept might be used to better understand what is happening in the world, in the fact right now. And I also hope that for those who didn't know the concept before, it served as a nice introduction to this to these concepts. And I also would like to express my hope that you will agree to join us again.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Europe, and in future we can talk more about biopolitics and of course other topics as well. So thank you again very much.
Of course, it was my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
And that was Maciek's interview with Andrei Makarychev, a visiting professor at the Institute of Political Studies in Tartu in Estonia. Maciek, thank you so much for having this discussion. I think it was very interesting to hear this idea of biopolitics and how it is applied to the situation that we have in Belarus, but also in other situations, looking at how migration crisis can be seen through that lens of biopolitics, but particularly from our standpoint, we are interested in how it works with Lukashenko's regime weaponizing migrants, as Professor Makarychev said. He used the expression, securitization of migration as an issue for these countries, and really the aim is to try to destabilize or put pressure on these countries. And And it's in some sense, if we look at the response, which we can have a debate about that in another time, but the response has been more borderization, more securitization of that area, and in this way we see that Lukashenko's, maybe it's not working the strategy fully because the political situation is the same, the relations and sanctions are still in place, the relations are bad. But at the same time, it is putting pressure, and there has to be some sort of solution. And these countries need to also consider this, this idea of biopolitics in this discussion and the debates of the situation there.
Yeah, thank you for this summary. I know it was a bit theoretical and something different than we usually do, but really, it was also my personal struggle, how we can talk about it, how we can somehow think about this difficult situation at the borderland. We have been confronted with all these pictures of people being there, which is difficult, and I don't have good answers. I know that this interview and this episode is of course not an answer for that, but at least an attempt to think about the place, political place we are in currently, because this is kind of a new development, at least for Poland, Poland, at least for this part of the EU. And yeah, referring to what you have said, I think this is a very strong comeback of thinking about borders within the EU.
Yeah,
we had this discussion some years ago during this migration crisis 2015, so it's not completely new, but you know, now it has another dimension, yeah, again, which is now closer to other states than it was in 2015. And I think we need to think about responses, yeah. We need to again think about, you know, about this borderization problem, about borders and the idea of the border, and with all consequences connected with it.
Absolutely, and I think also that we have to remember about the human element in it, and I think this is what also Andrei was saying. And also in regards, for I found it very interesting talking about it, when he was talking about the discussion about COVID-19 and how borders reemerged then, and how biopolitics can fit into this discussion, how we label countries as red, yellow, or green. You know, if you come from a red country, that means, you know, everybody that comes from that country is labeled red. Yeah, like it's it was very interesting to hear how we can think about biopolitics in this way and how we forget about this human element.
Yeah,
and it applies to, you know, to the migration crisis.
Yeah,
well.
And last remark, just referring to what you have said, because I think, you know, scientific language is not always easy, and probably, you know, the vocabulary stemming from the concept of biopolitics is also not something we are all familiar with. But on the other hand, this concept gives us some vocabulary here, yeah? And yeah, I think the role of language true. Here is really important, because we cannot forget about this human factor, as you said, but also we need language to describe the situation we are in, and probably it can somehow help us to address those problems, those challenges.
Yeah. Okay, Maciek, thanks again for initiating this discussion and for having the conversation with Andrei Makarychev. If there isn't anything else, I think we can move to the final part of the podcast episode, which is, of course, the traditional announcements, which includes our thank you to our patrons. But before we go into the thank you, maybe Maciek, do you have anything that you wanted to announce to our audience?
I think one thing, we are in the middle of very busy period for us.
Yes,
you maybe cannot see it, but on the backstage there is a huge production of episodes of this podcast, so stay tuned for that, because we are covering and we will cover a lot of issues, and a lot of new episodes will come soon. Probably, I'm not sure about that, but maybe we'll have to publish more than one episode per week. We will see how to
that would be unprecedented, I think, in the history of Talk Eastern Europe.
How to put it all together of course, make it also eatable for our audience. And yeah, as always, we appreciate any kind of feedback from you. So if you have any comments on this episode or another episode, just keep us informed.
Absolutely, yes, we love to hear from our listeners, from our audience, so please do send us a message, you know, or find us on Twitter. Love to hear from all of you. And I just want to add that, you know, there's another project coming. We mentioned it maybe a little earlier, but I'm not going to go into details, but Maciek and I are also working very hard to get this done before the fall is over. And it's a very interesting project, which we have learned a lot about. It's very different than the kind of topics that we cover at Talk Eastern Europe, but it is an audio project, and we will be announcing more very, very soon.
Okay, so we are quite mysterious about that, but
I think, but you know, if you've listened to the podcast, you might have caught it before. And if you read New Eastern Europe, you might have seen some information about it. So that's all I'm going to say. We're going to rely on your detective skills to find out what we are talking about. And if you can't figure it out, then in a few weeks, you will find out for sure. But there's one group of people that I know that they know about this, because we like to share our special information with our exclusive group of listeners, which are the podcast patrons, who each month give us a monthly donation to make sure that the podcast continues and that we can grow and strengthen our production abilities. And I just wanted, before we say hello to everyone, I just want to encourage you, if you're out there listening, please do consider being a patron. We are currently around 30, and I think it's time we come up with a new goal. So Maciek and I are going to come up with a new goal, maybe for the end of the year, to try to raise that up, because we've been at this really, really great group of 30 people for probably for the last several weeks, but we would love to increase and grow this community. But now is the time for me to say thank you, and the traditional patron shout out goes to Agnieszka, to Tom, to PM, to Eleanor, Olaf, Ian, CB, Klaus, Plum, and Sean, Naomi, JP, Elise, Sean, David, Anastasia, William, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Wilhelm, David, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. Thank you all for your continued support. You will be receiving the messages and information, of course, about the podcast first. You have the option to listen to the episodes ad-free via the Patreon page, and then a whole slew of other benefits that go along with it. So it's not just supporting the podcast, you have other benefits as well.
Yeah, thank you very much for your support. It's a wonderful thing, and the most important motivation to continue this project. And I have also one more incentive for those who might consider being a patron. I think it is already quite interesting, a network of people you might want to be part of. We meet from time to time to discuss different things related to the Eastern or Central Europe. But of course, you can choose always the way you want to be involved. We are not insisting. But yeah, I really appreciate those discussions we have together, because it's also a way how we develop this project and how we also learn how to produce this podcast.
Yes, it is a process that we are undertaking together with our patrons and, of course, the rest of our audience as well. So I just want to say thank you to everyone for being with us. Maciek, anything else to add before we say goodbye?
I think until next time, and this might come sooner than usual.
Stay tuned. Thank you so much for joining us.
Bye-bye.